Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. We are pushing mailbag back to tomorrow. I know we said we were going to do it today, but we're going to push it back to tomorrow. We've got a phenomenal guest today for this show, so you're not going to be completely disappointed. So you still got another day to submit all of your voicemails, your text messages, your questions you want to hear us to discuss. Tomorrow's episode will be mailbag. That's 331-979-1369. Leave us voicemails, text, your reaction from the NBA lottery draft, whatever you think about this lottery and where you think maybe the Bulls are going to pick, if you've got opinions on this playoff so far, or just the Bulls offseason in general, whatever you want to hear us talk about, either tweet at us or send us a text or a voicemail. 331-979-1369. Well, Matt, we had a pretty interesting day on social media yesterday, especially on Twitter. It only took 3 days, and finally, Bobby Portis has responded and accepted the challenge to play me in a game of bowling. And I'll be honest with you, now I'm a little bit
terrified. The two greatest words that you can hear in response to that challenge from Bobby Portis. A two-word tweet, anytime, anywhere. Amazing.
I'm one of the best bowlers in my region.
So we're going to try to get this set up. Obviously, this kind of just was thrown in our lap last night. But like we had said, and like we had said on the show previously over the last couple of days, we're going to try to set this up, make this something like an event. So all of our listeners out there, if you're in the Chicagoland area, you can make it out here. We're going to try to set up an event so you can come out and actually watch this. Hopefully Bobby will be down. We are thinking he still is. And obviously if he was strong enough to tweet about it, we're thinking that he is totally 100% down. So we're going to give more information as we get it, try to set something up. But not only do we want this to be fun, we also want to do it for a good cause. So we're going to try and see if we can raise some money for a charity of his choice as well. So we'll keep you guys in the loop. But yeah, I'm going to have to hit the bowling alley hard because I don't have a scouting report on Bobby Portis's bowling skills.
You're going to get schooled. I'm just confident. I'm confident that you're going to get schooled because if that was Bobby's random answer to what's something people don't know about you, if that's the first thing that popped into his head, you could probably be sure that he was thinking about bowling while doing that Q&A session, which means he probably likes to bowl a lot, which probably means he's very, very good at bowling. I'm not giving you any shot. Hey, sports betting is legal now. I think I'm going to put all sorts of money on Bobby.
We'll have to ask maybe a betting expert or somebody who works at a casino if they'll do a drop a line for us. But like I said, maybe I'm going to have to do a little bit of investigating, tap around close friends, maybe some players, some coaches at Arkansas, see if they've ever seen Bobby Portis bowl before. I need a scouting report on him. But yes, definitely exciting. We're going to try to set that up. So we'll definitely keep all of our listeners in the loop because we want you guys to show up to this as well. I think this is going to be something that is a really cool event. And yeah, have a chance to see me get owned by Bobby Portis in bowling, which I don't think is going to happen. I think I'm going to put up a pretty fair fight. Other thing that happened real quick, Matt, we got called a Chicago Bulls fan account on Twitter yesterday, and supposedly we got roasted by Dwayne Wade. I would like to beg to differ. I don't think we really got roasted on Twitter. More so, it was just a clapback.
I mean, did you see my response to them? Because I quoted the opening paragraph that they said, which was, you know, this Chicago Bulls fan account on Twitter probably didn't plan on getting roasted by Dwayne Wade. And I quoted their post and said, actually, yeah, that was 100% the plan. Like, I baited Dwayne Wade with that tweet, and he totally took the bait. Thanks anyway, though.
So between that, yeah, quite the day on Twitter. So if you're not following us, if you're not on Twitter, or if you are and not following us already, at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Very active over there, and things are starting to happen. So, but before we get to our interview, we've got a great interview with Nick Friedell coming up of ESPN. It's going to talk all things Bulls, the draft, sort of the end of the season with the Bulls. But before we get to that, Matt, I just want to get your thoughts real quick, though, on Western Conference Game 2 last night. Warriors going down, Rockets winning a game. If I'm not mistaken, did you say you were hard-pressed to see the Rockets actually pull off a win in this series, or you still think that might be a gentleman's sweep by the Warriors as they go home back to Oracle, to all tied up at 1-1?
I thought they could win a game. That's what I said. I thought that this game or this series would probably go 5 and maybe 6. So I'm glad we got to see the Rockets get a W at home, so at least they get the split going to Oakland. It was an impressive performance, and you look at, I mean, like, Harden did not have a good night. Like, he still poured in 27 points, but he was just 9 of 24 from the field, including 3 of 15 from downtown. But it was the role players who were totally absent and ghosted through game one. Ariza, PJ Tucker, and Eric Gordon combined for 68 points. That's big. And those are the role players who, behind Harden and CP3, led them to 65 wins this season. And even for them, that was an outpouring. That trio averaged just under 38 points per game combined over the entire season, and they put up 68 last night. So I'm not convinced that they can do that again. I'm certainly not convinced they can do that at Golden State. But at least we saw that if the Warriors have a bad night and the Rockets, and specifically the Rockets role players behind Harden and CP3, have a good night, the Rockets are capable of beating the Warriors. But the Warriors played like doo-doo last night. I mean, especially to start the game off on the wrong foot, turning the ball over so much, careless, just got off. I think it was like the first quarter sideline interview with Steve Kerr after the first quarter. He said, yeah, when we win a game, we tend to enjoy turning the ball over a lot the next day. And a bunch of turnovers in the first quarter for the Warriors. They never really got themselves going. Draymond Green kind of had a blah game. 6 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. Devil makes 3 right there. That is not a great stat line for Draymond. And yeah, so like that was essentially my takeaway. The Rockets role players played very well, and the Warriors had a poor night mentally, organizationally. Some of their key guys, you know, Clay had an off night, just 3 of 11 from the field, and not much from their bench either. So, going back to Oakland, I fully expect the Warriors to win 2 games and make this 3-1, and then maybe we'll see if the Rockets can force a game 6 when they get back to Houston when they're down 3-1. That's how I see that series going forward.
You brought up a good point in an off night from Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And I was wondering this, and they were talking about it on the broadcast as well. I wonder what Steph Curry's actual health level is right now. It seems like throughout that game, he seems like he has a little bit of a couple limitations, especially on defense. And obviously, when you're asked to task two of the best isolation players in basketball in Chris Paul and in James Harden, I get it. It's tough. But it also looked like, I'm not giving him any excuses or anything, but it doesn't look like he's 100% healthy out there. Like you had said, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry combined to go 10 for 30, so only 30% from the field. 30% as a whole, as a team, by the Warriors shooting from three. That's very unusual for a Warriors team who's very good from beyond the three-point arc. They were 9 for 30 last night. One of the biggest things, though, I think we talked about after Warriors-Rockets game one was whether or not the Rockets needed to switch up the way they were playing. And I had told you that I felt like a key to the Rockets game was not going away from what they do best, and that's playing isolation basketball. Not only letting James Harden get to the rack and go one-on-one a lot against a lot of these defenders, but also letting things happen with Chris Paul. And they did that in a combination of Eric Gordon kind of calling out some of these players and saying, you know, we need to move the ball more. You know, our role players needed to step up. And he got a lot of flack for that, but he turned around in game two and backed up those words at 8 for 15 with 27 points off the bench. So I think the Rockets did a good job of blending not only ball movement, but letting James Harden and Chris Paul play isolation in spots where they could find success. And I think PJ Tucker, like you had said, Eric Gordon, those two guys really stepped up last night and allowed for a lot of this to happen against a Warriors team that just looked like they got smacked in the face last night. And it was an off night, like you had said, from Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, off night from both of those guys. Draymond Green as well with only 6 points. He looked like he was getting increasingly frustrated as that game went on. And I know in the last maybe 30 seconds of the game, he had kind of a push off on Trevor Ariza. To me, I think going back to Oracle, it's going to be awfully tough for this Rockets team to, I think, pick up a win in either one of those games. And for me, if there's any key for the Rockets, they have to continue playing like this and finding that blend of ball movement and relying on some of their outside shooting and guys that they've relied on all season long, and a blend of when James Harden and Chris Paul needed to just take over and do their thing. And Mike D'Antoni had said the same thing after game one. He said, you know, why would we go away from isolation basketball when that's one of the best things that we do? That's one of our biggest strengths.
Yeah, that's what they did all season. But you're not wrong when you highlighted the fact that the Rockets were moving the ball very well last night. Some of those sequences that ended in Eric Gordon hitting a three, Gordon was 6-9 from downtown last night. A lot of it leading up to that was really strong ball movement. Gordon also, you know, showed his ability to create his own shot a couple of times, and I think that he's really the spark plug that they need off that bench. And he's capable of scoring 20, 25 plus, and we finally saw that in game two last night. But you're right, whether it's Gordon trying to do isolation things as the key scorer off the bench, or it's Harden or CP3, they also, yes, that is, you know, you dance with the person you took to the dance, as they say. And the Rockets got a lot of productivity offensively through isolation basketball all season long. And James Harden, at times last night, even though I mentioned he was not his most efficient self, still was doing his thing and breaking people down off the dribble and destroyed Steph Curry's ankles a couple more times. Steph Curry had an awful night defensively. You can do that, but you can also find the right moments to say, we have this roster that we built, which is James Harden, the elite scorer, CP3, the floor general, the vision, and then a bunch of shooters. Find those shooters. And yesterday they found those shooters with Tucker and Gordon and Ariza.
Going back to Golden State, I think this series has just got a lot more interesting. I know Charles Barkley had said that the Rockets weren't going to win a single game, and he got roasted last night on NBA on TNT, so that was pretty funny. I'm still excited and still very intrigued with this series, and I think there was an overreaction to the Warriors coming in and beating them in game one, you know, and I think LeBron has said this before, and other players have said that the series really doesn't take a flip until somebody wins a somebody wins a road game or ties the series. And people felt like that happened here in game one, but I think counting the Rockets out, if they had gone down 0-2, then I would understand, okay, I understand the sweep. But like you had said, I think it's going to be a really uphill battle for the Rockets going back to Golden State to play the next two games. But we'll see. I'm very interested. We got to get to our interview with Nick Friedell. We will not make you guys wait any longer. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. We're doing mailbag tomorrow. I want to just remind you right before this interview, 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. Leave us your voicemails, your text messages there if you want to tweet at us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls as well. Without further ado, here is our interview with ESPN's Nick Friedell.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls our guy, Nick Friedell, covers the NBA for ESPN, longtime Bulls beat writer and reporter. Nick, how are you? How have you been? How are these NBA playoffs treating you, man? I know that ESPN's got you bouncing all over the place these days.
It is great to be in Chicago for a few days. I've really enjoyed bouncing around a little more this year, but it's always good to be home, and I am excited to see what plays out in the next few days after learning all about that draft lottery order that upset so many people within the city here.
Yeah, you mentioned the draft lottery order. The Bulls did not get lucky this time around. That luck went to Sacramento, unfortunately, for all of us here in Bulls Nation. Nick, your impressions on the fact that the Bulls, in a weird, you know, stroke of unluck, I guess you could say, you know, had they not won the random tiebreaker draw with Sacramento, would be the team that got lucky with those combinations to pick second overall. That's not what pans out. And now the Bulls, who were banking on a top three pick after the Jimmy Butler trade as essentially part of that trade, are sitting at seven. They'll spin it any way that they can in a positive light, but you have to imagine that Paxson and the Bulls front office are disappointed by where they're slotted after this unfortunate season, right?
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't catch a break. And guys, I mean, there's no question when they were building that roster and they were trying to figure out after making the move to deal Jimmy what they wanted to do, they wanted to be in that top three, top five. They wanted to be in that range because they knew that in this draft, that's where the game-changing talents were. Now, when you look through the prospects who are going to be available in a month, they're still going to get a really good player. And if you trust your scouting, which they still do. I know a lot of fans don't want to believe that, but Michael Reinsdorf, he trusts Gar and Pax, and he trusts the rest of the front office group to get the right players in place. So they feel like they're going to get a really good player. But there's no doubt. I mean, the goal of the year was to tank away to a point where they landed all the way up near the top or at the top. And they just didn't catch the break that Sacramento caught. So you got to move on. I mean, there's nothing else you can do unless, and we can get into this too, unless you package that pick with several other pieces. And those are the kind of things that we'll find out here over the course of the next few weeks and certainly the days and the night of the draft. You're going into all these different possibilities. We'll see just how tied to everybody on that roster that they are. Although right now, as we sit here today, I think the only guy they are sure on is Markkanen. So everybody else is, you know, available if you're throwing the right pieces at them. So all that being said, they are where they are now. Now they start their plan, and that means getting these guys into the Advocate Center, talking to whoever they need to talk to get more intel on all the possible selections. And, you know, this happens in the league. You can have one plan and then it changes real quick. They just have to, guys, they have to hit on this pick and they have to make sure they get a nice player.
Nick, you don't understand how happy you just made me by saying that not only do the Bulls feel like Lauri Markkanen is really the only untouchable on this roster, but I got scolded by Matt yesterday for even thinking about the idea that the Bulls would entertain any of these top five teams and possibly trading up if they really fall in love with
somebody. It's not happening, Nick. Can you please tell me that this is just not realistic, that the Bulls are going to just, that all they have to do is package. People are talking about, well, just throw the Pelicans pick in there and move up a couple of spots. That's not happening. I don't see teams 1-6 trading down for that small of a prize.
Yeah, it's going to take more than that, the Nico pick. And, you know, then you go, all right, is it Chris Dunn? I don't know where the line is, guys. And that's what makes the draft so fascinating for all the different teams, all the fans. There's so much intrigue. Is it possible? Yeah, I mean, and let's be clear here. As much as they love Markkanen and as much as they wouldn't want to move Markkanen, do I think Markkanen is untouchable right now? I wouldn't say that, just because if the right pieces came into place, then, you know, you never know what can happen. But I think everything for this team is a possibility heading into this draft, guys, because they know, especially in the league that we're in now, with Golden State just dominating, you need more than two top-tier guys. I mean, you need, at this point, if you really want to contend for a title, you need three top-tier guys, and you need them to grow and build over time. And the whole point here is, the Bulls, with where they're at, they feel like they have one top-tier guy. They're not sure on LaVine, and they're not sure on Dunn, and you've got to find somebody else in this draft who you can build and put into with this group. So that's just the situation that they're in at the moment, and they're hopeful that whether they do make some move to get up a slot or two, or they stay at seven, they're hopeful that they can get one of those guys who they can grow and build with for a long time to come.
Just to follow up on that real fast, I know we're talking a lot about the NBA lottery and the draft coming up, probably about less than 4 weeks away. Is there somebody in this draft, talking about the prospects at seven, or maybe somebody that is in that top five conversation right now, that you feel like you could see slipping, maybe somebody like Jaren Jackson Jr. or Mohamed Bamba, or even just the slot of where teams are picking ahead of the Bulls? Is there somebody that I feel like maybe you fell in love with at seven that the Bulls could take, or maybe that the Bulls in general have fallen in love with, any of these prospects? Michael Porter Jr., Mikal Bridges, Jaren Jackson Jr., Marvin Bagley, Mo Bamba, Wendell Carter Jr., any of those guys, which one would you pick? Obviously, it's pretty early to tell still, but is there anybody that you see as a pretty great fit with this Bulls roster coming into the draft in about a month or so?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the fit, I think Bridges from Villanova makes a lot of sense. He fits what they're looking for. He fits a need. Although Pax is very clear, and he's right about this, historically the Bulls aren't looking so much for need. They're looking for who's the best guy on the board when our pick comes around. So Bridges would be the guy on paper where you go, all right, that makes a lot of sense for all involved. As far as somebody slipping, I mean, guys, Porter has the ability in his game to be potentially one of those game-changing talents. But when you're talking about an 18-year-old kid who already has back problems, everybody comes at this with a bias somewhere. I've watched the whole, I mean, we all watched the whole Derek situation for years play out, and knees and backs, those are different things. Totally, I understand. The point is, when you have somebody who has already had the back issues, you better make real sure that your doctors are comfortable with everything they see on every test and scan, etc. They have to know that they feel really good about where he's at. So if you want to roll the dice a little bit, maybe he is a guy who slips towards seven. Maybe he's a guy that Other teams have questions about, I mean, we'll see. This is why you do all the prep work. This is why you bring guys in to work out. This is all part of that process. But as far as fit goes, all along, Bridges seems to be the guy that would make a lot of sense. But we'll see what happens over the next month, and we'll see what kind of intel that they can get on a lot of different guys to make that decision.
As we're talking with Nick Friedell of ESPN here on Locked On Bulls, Nick, you mentioned the medicals, and that's something that John Paxson talked about when he was being interviewed after the draft lottery earlier this week, and specifically with Michael Porter Jr., an 18-year-old with back surgery. Say that the medicals all come back clear and fine, and there isn't any new, you know, problem that crops up or any new concerns, but it is just the information the Bulls already know, which is he had the back surgery. He missed most of his one and done season. The Bulls, you know, by their track record, are a very cautious drafting team. They don't take a lot of risks. They take more high floor guys than high ceiling guys. And we've seen that repeatedly in recent years. Even if Porter Jr.'s medicals come back clear and everything at this combine this week checks out, I mean, all Bulls fans are talking about, you know, there's a chance Porter slips to us at 7. There's a chance he slips to us at 7. To me, I don't know if the Bulls take that risk, even if all of his medicals right now today come back healthy. Do you see them taking that kind of risk with him?
I think it's possible only because we watched him deal for Markkanen last year. And Markkanen, guys, and I understand completely what you're saying, because we've been talking about it for years. The Bulls love the four-year guys who came from a solid program. Who
Denzel, baby.
Yeah, right. you know, who have gone through bigger college games over time. And then, boom, they make this deal for Markkanen. And the Markkanen pick works. I mean, people were crushing them a year ago at the draft for what they received in return for Jimmy. You know, who knows what Markkanen can be. And still, you know, a year later, who knows what Markkanen can be? Nobody's sure. He's still 1 year into his pro career, and we're talking about back problems. I mean, he's having some back problems too, although he didn't have any kind of major surgery. So it's all a guessing game. But the Bulls, like every other team, need to make as educated a guess as possible. So having said all that, if they believe that Porter can be that kind of game-changing guy, they're going to take Porter. If they think it's somebody else, then they're going to take them. But I think from top to bottom, Pax, Gar, Michael Reinsdorf, they know they need a lot of talent on this team, and they need it in a lot of areas. So if they know that Porter can maybe bring the most talent and they're confident that the medical reports come back strong, I don't think they would shy away from drafting him, just because historically they've shied away from drafting players like him because they don't like a lot of guys who haven't gone through a lot of years in school and haven't proven more on the college level.
Nick, I want to switch gears real fast here. This has been a couple months since we talked to you last, and just want to get your thoughts on sort of how the Bulls season ended on the floor. Is there anybody that maybe impressed you that maybe was getting a lot of flack on this roster, or I guess maybe had more of an important role in those last couple months of the season that intrigues you to see what they do next season? Talking about maybe guys like Bobby Portis or even Denzel Valentine. David Nwaba is a big question about whether or not the Bulls are going to bring him back. Hopefully they do. I think a lot of fans want them to bring him back. And also too, I guess, to top off on that, been talking about a lot of free agency, and fans have been asking why they don't spend money this summer. We've cautioned them as well. And I think the one thing Matt and I have come to a consensus is instead of maybe spending money on a guy like Jabari Parker or whoever you want to throw, whatever name you want to throw out there as a rumor, instead of that, maybe investing in restructuring a deal to sign Bobby Portis to an extension or somebody else on maybe a cheaper deal that they feel more confident in. So I guess, what were your thoughts towards the end of the season, the last two or 2.5 months of this season? Anybody that impressed you? And what do you think about maybe an extension for Bobby Portis as well?
Let's start with the impressions. I mean, Chris Dunn, and this, again, it seems like everything, and this is what happens in a rebuild, everything ties back into that Jimmy deal. because it was such a monumental shift of where they were and now where they're going in the last year or so. Chris Dunn was really impressive in stretches. I know he didn't play as much down the stretch, on top of the fact that he was dealing with some injuries. They were tanking. I mean, let's be real clear there that they wanted to lose a bunch of games in the end to help their position, and we know what happened. But Dunn proved to himself, and he proved to the rest of the league, that he can play. Moving forward now into what will be year three for him, he's just got to show that consistency on a higher level. And, you know, we're talking about all the possibilities in the draft. Well, we're going to find out how married to Dunn the Bulls are as an organization, because would they go after a guy like Trae Young? Would they go after a point guard? Would they go after a guy, even in a deal, who they think can be an upgrade over what they have now? A lot will be learned here over this process through the draft into the summer. But I like what I saw from him at times, and I think he can get better. As for Bobby, I mean, Bobby offensively changed the scope of his game. He started taking a hell of a lot more three-pointers. He looked more comfortable on the floor. He brought that energy that permeated throughout the rest of the team, and to his credit and to Nico's credit, I mean, guys, that after that incident, it could have gone a lot of different ways, a lot of bad ways. And they found a way to work through it. And I do think Bobby matured through that process. I mean, I think he felt terrible. I think he paid a big price. I mean, that's a lot of money and a lot of games to have lost with that suspension. And most of all for Bobby, he didn't want to be defined by the Nico incident the rest of his career. So what do you do to get through that? You go out and play solid basketball. The key for Bobby will be, you got to improve defensively. And defensively, you've got to bring it every night. And that's what separates the really solid, really good players in the league. So if you're the Bulls, yeah, you have those conversations this summer, you know, on an extension. But again, Bulls aren't alone in letting things play out and seeing what kind of season he has. And then, you know, seeing if he gets a deal somewhere else, or seeing if you want to lock him up on your own with an extension. So there are questions there, but I mean, Dunn was the guy who really kind of stood out to me as, hey, maybe he can play and be the leader of your team for a while. And with Bobby, I know he wants to be in Chicago, and I do think the Bulls want him here. They just want to see that more consistency every night on both ends of the floor.
Nick, we want to get your thoughts on these conference final series we got going on. But real quick, before we get to that, you mentioned him earlier. Zach LaVine, as we're talking about offseason roster situations and contract situations, obviously a restricted free agent. Paxson has said repeatedly, we love Zach, we want to keep him here. LaVine and his people have said the same thing about wanting to stay in Chicago and really become a key guy here. Not that many teams have max level cap space this summer, so it feels like the ball and most of the power is definitely on the Bulls, in the Bulls' court, so to speak, because, you know, they can say to Zach, if you want to explore other options and bring us a contract to match, that's fine. But really, I mean, I don't see Zach getting anywhere close to max level money. Maybe I think something more along the lines of a 2 or maybe 3 year deal, where he's getting good money but not crazy money. Is that sort of how you see these negotiations shaking out as well?
No question. And when you read through Pax's comments at the end of the season, you know, I think he made that pretty clear. If LaVine wants that big money, find it, and then we'll make a decision. But, guys, I got to tell you, having watched the Bulls off and on, obviously, throughout the year, I right now I'm just not sold on where LaVine is moving forward. And again, he's so young, you don't know if this was just kind of a glitch, because he was coming back off that ACL injury, and you know, he's just finding his way and finding his rhythm after being off so long, or if this is just kind of the player that he is. You know, he's had some really great games that that Minnesota game where they beat Tibbs and Jimmy at the UC comes to mind instantly. But he had way too many other games where he just kind of disappeared or he was forcing shots, and you're going, what is happening? I think the biggest concern for me if I'm a Bulls fan is I've spent so much time in Minnesota this year, and the Timberwolves people, they loved Zach LaVine. As a person and as a player, they said, you know, he tries hard. And when Tibbs came in, he was really trying hard to play defense. He just wasn't a very good defender. And you go, well, you know, Tibbs, if Tibbs can't get him to play defense, and that's a whole other conversation because the Timberwolves as a group were terrible defensively this year. But the point is, if you can't get more out of him in that kind of situation, you wonder if he's just never going to be a really good defender. And if you're paying a guy mega money, big time money, you need him to be really good on both sides of the floor. And I don't see it from LaVine. And the difference now for the Bulls is a year later, with the way Markkanen played, I mean, LaVine was supposed to be the guy out of that deal. But with the way Markkanen played, the Bulls could sell it as, hey, look, we got Markkanen, we got Dunn, who we like and we think can get better. I would not pay Zach LaVine a ton of money or a ton of years and tie my future to his future just because I really don't like what I saw. So there are a lot of different questions to play out here. But, yeah, there's no doubt. I don't think the Bulls are going to overpay by any stretch to keep Zach LaVine. And I also don't think he's going to find the massive money that he's looking for this summer. He's going to have to go prove it on the floor, and then maybe he can get a longer-term deal with the kind of huge money that he wants.
Just to follow up real quick on that, you bring up an interesting point about if he ends up getting something that's outrageous as far as money, and the Bulls have to make that decision, what do you think the reaction would be if Zach LaVine ended up walking and going somewhere else for a max amount of money? How do you think the fan base as a whole would take that and going back to, you know, being that vital piece in that Jimmy Butler trade? Obviously, Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn turned out to be better pieces than maybe we initially all thought. But what would be the reaction and how would the front office be able to not only face the media, but face the fans and say, you know what? Yeah, we decided not to pay Zach LaVine and he's going elsewhere. How do you see that playing out if it does?
Yeah, I mean, I may be in a minority here on this, but I mean, I would not pay him gigantic money. And if that offer appeared, and you're the Bulls, I mean, Bulls fans, you guys know better than anybody, you're doing the podcast every week and you're hearing from fans on social media like I am. I mean, fans are so unhappy with so many of the moves the last few years from the front office, from Garland Pax. But the reality is, I do think there's a lot of smart fans out there. And I think they saw what LaVine did last year, and they went, all right, we'll see. So I understand the point. The point is, oh, man, they're going to let the biggest piece of this deal from their perspective walk. I think there are a lot of smart fans out there that would go, hey, you know what? For as much flack as Garland Pax get, I don't think that's the worst move. I really don't. If another team wants to come in and pay Zach LaVine massive money, fine. Good luck. And again, this ties back into Markkanen. You can sell to your fan base, hey, we got the guy. And maybe we didn't know at the time that he was going to be the guy, but we got the guy now. So it's going to be really interesting. I know that there are fans that are still high on LaVine and think that he can turn it around next season and beyond. That's all well and good, but I don't think there'd be the kind of massive backlash that there might have been a few years ago. And I think part of the frustration would be deals that have occurred or moves that have happened in the past, not so much this specific move. Because, again, if it's me and this scenario plays out like we're talking about, I don't think the Bulls would be wrong to just say, hey, Zach, thank you, good luck.
All right, Nick, shifting to the conference finals real quick. I scanned down that ESPN's panel of NBA experts' predictions before the conference finals began to double check because I believed, I remember correctly, that you had the Cavs in six or maybe seven, down 0-2 now to the Boston Celtics. Maybe it's just because we all forgot how much the Raptors are playoff chokers, or maybe it was the fact that LeBron's role players around him actually stepped up and were knocking shots down in that series, so that collectively between Bron and the Celtics being young and inexperienced outside of Horford, you thought, all right, well, the Cavs are going to win this series too. You still taking the Cavs, or is this where LeBron's team finally gets bounced? And if the Cavs do get bounced by Boston here and LeBron fails to make the finals for the first time in 18 billion years, does he leave Cleveland this summer?
As far as the Cavs, I'm not going to jump off yet. They still have LeBron. And any team in the East to beat LeBron four times, I mean, we know how difficult that has proven to be over the years. So I would say it with this caveat. I think the Cavs need to win out. I don't know if they can. We're going to find out. But I think they need to win out, because I do not believe that they're going to go into Boston and win a Game 7 in that environment. The Celtics, guys, and I watched it in that Bucks series, you know, it seems like forever ago. It's probably a month ago now. that team, that Celtics team, has a lot of talent. I mean, everybody harps on, oh my gosh, there's no Kyrie, there's no Hayward, they have no chance. I mean, let me be honest here. I thought they were beating the Bucks in five, and go back and look at those predictions, and I did think they were going to beat Philly. And I know everybody was like, oh, Philly, it's their time. No, I don't believe that Embiid and Simmons were ready for the moment, and that was very clear in that series. But the point is, Boston still has Tatum. They still have Brown. Al Horford, you know, a lot of people crush the Celtics for that Horford deal. I mean, Horford, when he's in the role that he's in now, in more of the forefront, he is still a damn good player, and he is a very calming influence for the rest of that young team. Marcus Smart defensively is this huge spark plug for the group. So they have all those guys, on top of the fact that Brad Stevens is unbelievable and is one of the best coaches in the game. So there were too many people looking at the Celtics group and talking about what they didn't have, not focusing on what they do have. I still don't know if they have enough to knock off LeBron, but if they beat the Cavs once in Cleveland in these next couple games, that series is a wrap, because they will be coming back to Boston with so much momentum and confidence. I don't think anybody will be able to topple them.
I think LeBron's game too, if you just watched the opening quarter of game two, is just kind of ridiculous. Now, as much as people have talked about how good Kevin Durant has played in this playoffs, I think shying away from the greatness of LeBron is pretty crazy. I think fans need to be reminded, even though the Cavaliers are so bad around him, his greatness can still do things like potentially maybe pull off an upset against the Celtics. And it's crazy to say that it's an upset when you got LeBron James on your team. But I wanted to switch quickly to the Western Conference Finals. Matt and I were talking about this before you came on, and talking about the series being tied at one, going back to Oracle. I brought this up to Matt too, because it seems like Steph Curry isn't playing at 100% health-wise, and it's sort of showed in that game too, as well as talking about the Rockets too, and whether they were criticized or not after game one for playing too much isolation basketball. I've got my opinions where I think, you know, the Rockets shouldn't shy away from that, but find a blend between moving the ball and getting some of those role players like Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker to step up, in which they did in game two. How do you see that series shaking out, and is this going to be a gentleman's sweep, or can the Rockets really hand Golden State a really tough series and potentially pull off an upset?
No. No. Golden State, even if Steph isn't 100%, and I agree with you, I think he's still trying to find a rhythm. I mean, he's only been back for a handful of games. Even if he's not there, Golden State has just too much talent. Golden State plays their brand of basketball better than any team can. We're talking about the Boston-Milwaukee series. I just watched this with New Orleans and Golden State. New Orleans didn't want to change the way they played because that was what got them success. Problem is, Golden State plays that that run and gun style, get up the, and down the floor, take threes better than they do. Same thing here. I mean, Houston's had a hell of a year. They deserve credit. Harden's going to be the MVP. Great. Okay. The Warriors still have Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Iguodala when he's starting in that Hamptons 5 lineup. And they have this incredible amount of talent that I, you know, and this is part of a broader conversation about the league, but I think so many fans got caught on, oh man, Houston, oh, the, you know, it's the they've got all these all these new pairings with Chris Paul and PJ Tucker and all these new guys. Maybe they can give them a push. Guys, Golden State is incredible. I mean, they as a group, the talent level at the top of that roster is something that we haven't seen in years and years. I mean, I think they're the closest thing the league has seen to the Michael Scotty Bulls as far as the personality of the group, but just the talent on the whole. So I don't believe at all that Houston could win a few more games here and find a way to upset them. Maybe it goes six, but Golden State will win this series, and they'll win because their guys doing what they do are just better than the Rockets and what they do.
All right, Nick, we're coming up on a half hour here. We appreciate you being so generous with your time. Before we let you go real quick, Jordan has been chirping at Bobby Portis a lot over the past week or so about taking him on in a bowling competition, because I don't know if you recall from earlier this season when Bobby was doing a Q&A and he said something most people don't know about me is that I'm one of the best bowlers in my region. Jordan and I have been laughing about what exactly a region means when you're talking about bowling skills. Do you, from your 2 years covering Bobby and the Bulls exclusively, have any inside intel about just how good of a bowler Bobby Portis is?
I do not. I've heard it a couple times just in passing that Bobby, I mean, look, Bobby's a very confident guy to begin with. So if he says he's a damn good bowler, I would trust him on it. You know, I feel like I've heard a couple of the stories, like, back at Arkansas, I think he went to the lanes a lot. It was kind of a release. And look, Bobby's not the first NBA guy who is a really good bowler. I mean, Chris Paul, we're talking about the Rockets. He has a tournament, I believe, every year. A lot of guys find solace in going and getting a few games in. But as far as seeing Bobby bowl or hearing stories about how good of a bowler he is, I can't tell you I know all that much, but I would be interested to see how pumped up Bobby gets on the lanes, because I know how much he thrives on revving the energy up on the floor every night when he gets out there.
Yeah, well, he finally just responded to Jordan on Twitter last night, and his response was short and sweet. He said, anytime, anywhere. So we're going to try and make it happen at some point this offseason.
You guys better make it happen somewhere.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to watch my co-host get his ass kicked on the lanes by Bobby. I think it should be a good time.
Yeah, this is going to go very badly. Maybe I'll have to make a few calls to some local bowling lanes around Arkansas, see what kind of talent I'm going up against. But hey, I'm still pretty confident. Bobby doesn't want this smoke over here in bowling, so we'll find out.
Neither of you lacking in confidence. What about you, Nick? You any good at bowling? You want to join us this summer if we get this thing organized?
No, I can't bowl for you know what. I mean, maybe after a beverage or two, maybe I can loosen up and get to about 150, 160. But there's no consistency.
If I hit triple digits, I'm pleased with myself.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, so it's all about the expectations. But yeah, I went bowling in Bay City, Wisconsin, I believe, during that Bucks series. Man, oh man, I am I am not running back to the bowling alley.
You are not the best bowler in your region is what you're saying.
That is for sure.
All right, Nick, we'll let you go. We appreciate the time as always. He's Nick Friedell covering the NBA for ESPN. Follow him on Twitter at Nick Friedell. Nick, enjoy the rest of these playoffs. Enjoy the summer that is starting to come here in Chicago. Enjoy your travels wherever you may go, and hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
All right, you got it. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We want to thank our guest, Nick Friedell from ESPN, for joining us for phenomenal conversation about a variety of different topics, not only the Bulls, but the draft and some playoffs too as well. So that was a great interview. We appreciate his time as well. Remember, you can hit us up tomorrow. We're going to be doing mailbag 331-979-1369. If you've got some thoughts about this interview, some questions, maybe some stuff that Nick had said, you want to react to that, you can leave us a voicemail there at 331-979-1369. You can also text in as well. Remember, we're going to try to ramp up this hype around this Bobby Portis bowling competition that we've got going on here. So feel free to tweet at him and tag us in Locked On Bulls if you guys think Bobby's going to smoke me or vice versa. Let's get the hype going on Twitter as well and keep that going. But we definitely are going to try to set something up. So we'll be in contact and we'll let you guys know as well. Like we said, we're trying to make this an event. So not only the listeners out there that maybe live in the Chicagoland area can see it as well. Try to make this as big as possible and do it for a good cause. So start tweeting at Bobby Portis and text us in all your reactions, your voicemails, 331-979-1369. Reminder, Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
I'm one of the best bowlers in my region.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.